"Put that damn thing away," Georgia said. Jojo regarded the revolver in his hand as though it was the gun and not the girl who had said it. "The way you're getting on with that gin, you're liable to blow your own pecker off."
"Doesn't do me that much good anyhow," he said.
"Whether you find danger on Svalbard or whether you fly off unharmed, you are a recruit under arms, a soldier. We have no more choice in that than whether or not to be born."
"Oh, I like choice, though," he said. "I like choosing the jobs I take, and the places I go, and the food I eat, and the companions I sit and yarn with. Don't you wish for a choice once in a while?"
At first, Violet couldn't make out what the thing, the creature, was on the other side of a glass barrier. Was it a snake? A huge snake? The largest snake she had ever seen, even in photographs, lay languid and unmoving on the floor inside an enclosure like a large aquarium, only about 10 feet away on the other side of the scummy glass. Poor Lloyd. What a stressful workplace. The minute your cute rating drops, you're a goner. Guests rank us as knockout, honey pie, adequate, or stinker. That I'm complaining. At least I'm working. At least I'm not a stinker like Lloyd. I'm a solid honey pie adequate. Heading home with $40 cash. In the traditional imagery, hungry ghosts are beings who, due to their accumulation of negative karma, are stuck in a place where they crave voraciously, but can never ever get satisfaction. They are portrayed as starving wraiths with tiny mouths, thin necks, and very large bellies, all of which symbolizes their insatiable hunger.
"Cthulhu, they call me. Great Cthulhu. Nobody can pronounce it right.
Are you writing this down?"
"Every word?
Good. Where shall I start? Very well, then, the beginning. Write this down, Waitley. I was spawned uncounted eons ago in the dark mists of Kai Yingaiya. No, of course I don't know how to spell it. Write it as it sounds."
"Do you want to know about my playground?"
Lang shouted, sending Tom back a step.
"At my school, I was the boy that decided which children bled and which children went unharmed. I grew up smart enough to know my place in the world and strong enough to defend it. And I became a soldier, and I became a captain, and men died because I told them to, and men were killed because I ordered it, and I have borne more blood than you can even imagine."
Sarah pulled back and drew her forearm across her mouth, disgust on her face.
"God, that was stupid," she said. "I just had to do it because they told us not to."
"It's all right," I said. "I don't mind."
"I know that you're in love with my brother."
"Don't say that," I whispered. I had the urge to cap my hand over her mouth, but I didn't, knowing she would throttle me.
"Don't ever say that out loud." "Think twice, you prickly-lipped eunuchs."
Jackal smiled. The voice was ill-humored, commanding, and familiar. The cavaleros were lowering their lances, every mouth agape.
"Perfect timing, Fetch," Jackal called over his shoulder.
He gave the men a gloating smile before turning around. A moment later, his own jaw fell open. Fetching stood upon the roof of the brothel with a stock bow in each hand, both loaded and trained on the riders. She was stark naked. The history of animals has the shape of a tree. A single root gives rise to a series of branchings as we follow the process forward in time. One species splits into two, and each of those species splits again if it does not die out first. There is a screaming cord of tension in his shoulder that makes it look like his hand is all that is holding him upright. It shows up harshly against the black and white text. The only thing Horatio can pay attention to instead of the research writ underneath the crawling veins snaking underneath his paling skin. Fragile, and yet solid, and always a world away.